Hello, I'm Sue Hepburn and joining me today is John Godfrey. Arundel Museum is currently presenting an exhibition focusing on the massive rebuilding project undertaken in the last decades of the 19th century by Henry, 15th Duke of Norfolk, which transformed the castle into the imposing landmark that exists today. This magazine is based on the information in the exhibition, and I hope it will give you an idea of the scale of the project and the vision of Duke Henry.
The Arundel Castle that exists today has gradually evolved over almost 1,000 years. It was founded in 1067 when William I rewarded his kinsman, Roger de Montgomery, with large tracts of land, including a third of the county of Sussex, on the condition that he should build a castle near the mouth of the River Arun to protect the gap in the South Downs formed by the river valley. Its first phase of construction consisted of a motte or mound, 100 feet high, a dry ditch and enclosed baileys with wooden timber defences, which were gradually replaced with masonry over the following 100 years. In subsequent centuries, the kings, dukes and earls who owned Arundel Castle and its attendant lands embarked on enlargement, refurbishment and rebuilding projects according to their tastes, requirements and financial circumstances. At times, the castle has suffered periods of destruction, some deliberate in order to make way for improvements and enlargement, but also as a result of action during the English Civil War, when it was besieged twice in 1643 and then occupied by parliamentarian forces until 1653. When they withdrew, they left considerable destruction in their wake, but little was done to rectify the damage for over 100 years, with the Dukes of Norfolk focusing on their other estates and properties. It wasn't until the 1780s that the 10th Duke decided to restore the castle as a proper country house. But he died in 1786, leaving his son Charles, the 11th Duke, known as the Drunken Duke, to embark on the project. As finances allowed, it became his hobby for the rest of his life, with the beautiful library and Arundel Park as his legacy. The 13th Duke, who inherited in 1842, set in motion a complete redecoration and refurbishment, which was completed in time for Queen Victoria's visit in 1846. When he succeeded in 1856, the 14th Duke began a programme of rebuilding in the Gothic Revival style, but he died prematurely in 1860, and this was put on hold. Although the refurbishment schemes undertaken by the 11th to the 14th Dukes were rather piecemeal and incomplete, they had a common aim to restore a consistently medieval architectural character to the exterior and to make the interior into a comfortable modern house for large-scale entertaining. It fell to Henry, 15th Duke of Norfolk, to realise that aim.
Henry, 15th Duke of Norfolk, short of stature and famously unkempt, was known affectionately by all as our little Duke. Without any sense of personal vanity, Duke Henry was nevertheless deeply conscious of his status and responsibilities as Earl Marshal of England, the leading lay Catholic in the country, and one of the richest men in the land. Having given expression to his religious faith in the building of Arundel Cathedral, opened in July 1873, Duke Henry turned his attention to refurbishing and rebuilding Arundel Castle as a worthy expression of his own ancestral heritage. The works began in 1877 to the designs of the scholarly medievalist architect Charles Alban Buckler. Demolition of earlier ranges and the erection of large new sections lasted nearly 30 years, so that it can only be during the last 10 years of his life that Duke Henry was able to enjoy a castle free of building works, at which time he had a young family with his second wife, Gwendolyn, who he married in 1904. Duke Henry was actively involved in every aspect of the project, from the approval of major architectural features to the choice of door fittings and colours of paint. Buckler would provide numerous sketches of possible designs, drawing on examples of medieval architecture in Sussex and elsewhere, for the Duke's approval. If undecided, he would have wooden cutouts of towers and chimneys to full scale set in place for comparison. Despite his enthusiasm for all things medieval, Duke Henry was immensely practical and keen to include every modern convenience. The same attention to detail was applied to the design of practical items such as radiators and light fittings, as to gateways and battlements.
Charles Alban Buckler, architect, artist and topographer, was the son and grandson of architects. Deeply religious and devoted to the study of medieval art and liturgy, he became one of the most distinguished of the early to mid-Victorian Catholic architects, responsible for the design of numerous Catholic churches. In 1874, he came into contact with the Norfolk family through a commission from Duchess Minna, Duke Henry's mother, for St. Peter's Church in Shoreham. For Duke Henry, Buckler had all the necessary qualities for the Arundel Castle project. He had converted to Catholicism at the same time as Duke Henry's mentor, John Henry Newman, and so shared Duke Henry's religious beliefs. He had a profound knowledge and appreciation of English medieval architecture, Duke Henry's preferred style, and a complementary interest in heraldry, in due course becoming under the Duke's auspices Surrey Herald Extraordinary. Furthermore, he operated single-handedly, allowing the kind of one-to-one professional relationship that Duke Henry most enjoyed. For the works at Arundel, Buckler made sketches of medieval buildings all over Sussex, Bodiam, Bramber, Pevensey and Lewes, to provide possible prototypes for sections of the castle, and in fact drew on examples from further afield, such as Glastonbury, Winchester and Westminster. The architect and client's shared interest in heraldry resulted in numerous decorative elements, adding historical references to window frames, door furniture and even keyholes. For all items, whether massive ashlar walls or small gunmetal window catches, Buckler provided a constant stream of sketches and drawings for Duke Henry's approval.
The building period, the 1880s and 90s, were tough times for British agriculture, profits being affected by a succession of poor harvests and the importation of cheap food from the Americas, Australia and New Zealand. However, the rent receipts from farms owned by the Duke of Norfolk in Sussex remained stable, varying only from £20,000 to £25,000 per annum between 1875 and 1914, the equivalent of £3 to £4 million today. The 1880s were particularly difficult, and reflecting national trends, there was a further recession in the early years of the 20th century. However, the Duke of Norfolk, advised by his agent, Colonel Edward Mostyn, was able to ride out the storm, with major building works on the castle, the town and the estate. The improvements to the buildings on the agricultural estate attracted capable and hard-working tenants, many coming to Sussex from the West Country. According to a note written for Duke Henry in 1908, the total cost of the rebuilding was £570,377, 17 shillings and 10 pence, the equivalent of £56.5 million in today's prices. To finance the reconstruction of the castle, in 1899, Duke Henry sold the rights to hold markets and the mineral rights in Sheffield to the Sheffield City Corporation, along with large tracts of land, particularly Hallam Moors. These sales realised £526,000, or £52 million in today's prices. The shortfall was probably made up from income over the period of the construction project.
Alongside their Catholic faith and their interest in all things medieval, the Duke and his architect were also adherents to the Victorian Gothic Revival architectural movement, which looked back nostalgically to a pre-Reformation Catholic past. Allied to this was a focus on the trades and skills of individual craftsmen and artisans, harking back to a pre-industrial age. Influences included A.W.N. Pugin, who designed the interior of the Houses of Parliament and Big Ben, George Edmund Street, designer of the Royal Courts of Justice, Sir George Gilbert Scott, designer of the Albert Memorial, and the Victorian and polymath John Ruskin. These ideas would underpin the rebuilding work, and the relationship between architect and client would develop into a close collaboration. In the 1870s, the castle was a hodgepodge of styles, constructed and reconstructed over almost 900 years. Duke Henry was keen to preserve all that remained of the Norman castle and gave instructions not to damage any ancient features that might be revealed in the course of work. But other areas, like the West Wing, were entirely redeveloped.
The rebuilding project took nearly 30 years in total, from 1877 to 1906. All areas of the castle were affected at different times, with some undergoing remodelling and refurbishment, while others were completely rebuilt. There was, however, a 10-year-long pause in building due to the personal tragedy suffered by Duke Henry when his wife, Duchess Flora, whom he had married in 1877, died from a long illness in 1887. She was only 34. Henry and Flora's son, Philip, born in 1879, was blind and epileptic and never developed beyond the mental age of a baby, although he lived until he was 21 years old. With first-rate craftsmanship throughout, the castle is extremely well built. The foundations are 50 feet deep, the ashlar stonework and the lead roof require little maintenance and were built to last. The external realisation of Buckler and Duke Henry's vision is a magnificent and imposing castle in the medieval Gothic style, which proudly dominates its commanding position overlooking the Arun Valley, just as William I intended in 1067.
Given the massive grandeur of the exterior, the interior of the castle does not disappoint. In some ways, it's even more impressive. With great ingenuity and consistency, mid-13th century architecture and design were adapted to suit late 19th century domestic requirements. It is as robustly Gothic inside as it is out. One can only imagine the enjoyment the Duke and his architect derived from sourcing radiators, electric light fittings and picture hooks, all in the medieval style and all perfectly in keeping with their vision. Duke Henry was determined to retain as much of the original medieval fabric of the building as possible, and was delighted when in July 1879 they uncovered Henry II's blocked windows in the outer wall of the drawing room, which were then carefully restored. But in the main, the interior, like the exterior, is down to the influence of Buckler, who studied great medieval buildings such as King's Hall, once part of Winchester Castle, and New College, Oxford. In his complete rebuild of the West Wing, Buckler constructed the chapel, completed in 1898 as a demonstration of the family's strong Catholic faith. The sources of the details, here as throughout the castle, recall the mid-13th century with nods to Westminster Abbey. The polished Purbeck marble, the stonework, the intricate carvings and the stained glass are all rendered to the highest possible standards of craftsmanship. Similarly, in the nearby Baron's Hall, every detail is carefully considered, from the hammer beam and Arundel oak roof, the stained glass windows and the fireplaces, to the details of door hinges and keyholes, each of which is different. Buckler's extensive study of heraldry at the College of Arms is evident in many areas of the castle, particularly in the Baron's Hall and in the magnificent carved fireplaces in the drawing room. Many of the devices incorporated relate to the Dukes of Norfolk and their many ancestors, representing centuries of intermarriage among the nobility of the British Isles. Having created large new living spaces, Duke Henry needed to furnish and decorate them. Bond Street dealer Charles Davis acted as his agent, and throughout the 1880s he collected items both discerningly and on a large scale. Due to a lack of availability, not all his purchases were from the medieval period, so he also acquired later works which, due to their Gothic character and elaborate craftsmanship, helped to soften the somewhat austere nature of the rooms. As well as furniture, the Duke collected armour and weapons for the armoury, carvings and paintings, often from earlier collections that were being sold off. The impression given is that of a grand medieval castle with the flavour of a stately home, fitting for the position of one of the leading and richest members of the British aristocracy. But it was also designed to be a comfortable family home.
Duke Henry's passion for all things medieval was rivaled by his love of late 19th century innovation. And for the interior of his home, he was keen to take advantage of the arrival of new modern technologies. A striking feature of Arundel Castle is the advanced domestic arrangements, which combined modern technology, antiquarianism and medieval influences. The castle was one of the first English country houses to be built with service lifts, electric lights, central heating, firefighting equipment and running water, which supplied the principal guest bedrooms, the Duke's apartment and the nursery with bathrooms and water closets. Buckler researched and designed many of the features of the new technologies, which were closely monitored by the Duke and then custom made by craftsmen to the highest specifications, and many are still in use today. One of the first innovations that Duke Henry embraced was electricity, having initially installed a limited supply for his and Flora's wedding in 1877. 14 years later, the full lighting system was devised by the electrical engineer Arthur Phillips and executed by the Brush Electrical Engineering Company Limited of Loughborough. A half-timbered generator house was built near the stables to contain two Victorian steam dynamos. Each were 90 horsepower and powered by a Lancashire-type boiler. Wires in iron conduits were laid underground, covering a distance of 800 yards to the castle, where they fed 1,000 lamps. Perhaps the most staggering feature of the electrical installation was the cost, which totalled £36,169, 16 shillings and tuppence, the equivalent of nearly £4 million in today's prices. The provision of firefighting equipment was another integral feature of the rebuilding project, and one that required a considerable feat of engineering. It was devised by J.C. Merriweather and supplied by his company. The system provided a steam-fired fire engine on permanent standby, which was capable of pumping upwards of 300 gallons per minute, and alongside it was a manual engine and about a dozen hydrants with hoses attached, within the castle. The water supply was delivered from Swanbourne Lake, where an adjacent engine house, equipped with a large water wheel and two pumping engines, forced the water through a 5-inch rising main to a height of about 150 feet into a large storage tank containing 400,000 gallons of water and a second overflow tank with 200,000 gallons of water. The water flowed the quarter of a mile from the tanks to the castle by gravity via two mains pipes, one of which was dedicated for firefighting. The other pipe carried the domestic water supply to the castle, but in case of emergency, was also used for firefighting purposes. Duke Henry also used this system to supply water gratis to the town. The overall cost of the water supply and drains was £15,177, 7 shillings and 5 pence, the equivalent of £1,600,000 today. Duke Henry wasn't taking any chances, which was just as well, as in 1896 the recently installed electric lights at Arundel Castle caused a fire which the Duke's agent, Mostyn, feared could have been catastrophic had it not been caught early. It's likely that the state-of-the-art Merryweather firefighting equipment proved its worth.
A large number of contractors and companies were involved with the project to rebuild Arundel Castle. The builder engaged for the initial phase of rebuilding was a MacManus, but he was paid off at the end of his contract, as Duke Henry felt that his 10% commission was excessive. In comparison, the architect Butler charged 5% commission for his work. Ratté and Kett of Cambridge then took over as the main contractors for the project. In 1879, they carved the oak ceiling in the drawing room, and they were still working on the project in the 1890s. As with all large-scale building projects, problems arose, particularly focusing on the speed of progress. In 1897, George Heveningham, writing on behalf of the Duke, informed Kett that he was unhappy with the progress of works, reminding him of promises so repeatedly made that the south front of the castle would be under cover by the end of the year. It also states that he emphasised that the chapel and old gateway should be speedily completed. George Kett replied, apologising for the tardy pace of construction and giving fresh assurances that certain milestones would be reached shortly. There is evidence that these delays cost the builders dearly. In the Arundel archives, there is a statement from March 1899 showing the penalties incurred by Ratté and Kett. The west wing should have been covered by the 1st of October 1894, but it was not covered until the 7th of November 1898. With a penalty of £10 a week, this delay of 214 weeks incurred a penalty of £2,140. Additionally, works to be finished by 1st of March 1895 were also not completed on time, incurring a further penalty of £2,080, making a grand total of £4,220, which is over £446,000 today.
In the late 19th century, a project on the scale of the rebuilding of Arundel Castle required a considerable labour force, and many workers from outside the regular Arundel estate employees were required, especially those with specific skills, crafts and trades. During the period of the rebuilding work, the workforce varied between 150 and 300 men. All of those workers had to be accommodated either in Arundel or the surrounding area, with many leaving their homes and families for months or years at a time to take advantage of the employment opportunities. It must have had a considerable impact on the town. One such family was the Lawrence family, originally from Norton-sub-Hampden in Somerset. William Lawrence started out as a quarry labourer progressing to stonecutter and then to stonemason, and by 1894 was foreman of the stonemasons and labourers at Arundel Castle. Two of William's sons, Harry, a stone sawyer, and Samuel, a stonemason, also worked on the rebuilding of Arundel Castle, and they were joined by William's nephew, Arthur, also a stonemason, and all lived in various lodgings in the town. In line with Duke Henry's policy of employing his co-religionists, these men were Catholics. Although the exact dates are unclear, they probably worked when required for around a decade, and both Arthur and Harry met and married local girls. Meanwhile, William's wife, Anne, and their other eight children remained in Somerset. Harry's wife, Winifred, was born in Arundel, and her father was employed by the Duke as a security officer and later rent collector. The family lived in Hyon Tower in Arundel Park. Harry and Winifred were married in 1899 and had six children. They had a greengrocery business in School Lane, which their daughter Isabel ran later from 1938 until shortly before her death in 1992. The merchandise expanded to include confectionery, and being opposite the school is fondly remembered by generations of Arundel children. In 1915, the family also opened a greengrocer's shop in Tarrant Street, which continued as a family business until 1990. As a result of the building work, this family's contribution to the Arundel community lasted for most of the 20th century. Many of the workmen employed on the rebuilding project were unskilled labourers who were struggling with the cost of living in 1895. Duke Henry and his agent Mostyn were keen to alleviate the distress of the workers. Letters in the Arundel Castle archives show that tickets for 130 poor workmen to acquire food and fuel were quickly issued and distributed by the local clergy or the overseer. This was at a total cost of £82.16.10, nearly £9,000 today. It was agreed that the tickets should be distributed based on the marital status of the men in question, but to go into the number of children would be much more difficult. During the rebuilding project, Duke Henry maintained good relations with the workers. On the 20th of May, 1893, 300 to 400 men who were employed on the construction site were entertained to an Arundel Castle works dinner, organised by Duke Henry as a thank you to everyone involved. Duke Henry's efforts to look after the workers were appreciated. The builders sent hand-painted cards to the Duke on his birthday.
The castle today is the legacy of the Dukes of Norfolk and their ancestors, but much of it is due to the vision of Henry, 15th Duke, and his architect Charles Buckler. Its massive, imposing exterior has hardly changed in the 120 years since its completion, and it has aged well. Internally, there has been some modernisation over the years, and the east wing has been converted into a family home. But it retains all the features so carefully chosen by Duke Henry. The overwhelming number of designs prepared by Buckler meant that some ideas were not used at the time, but they have not all been consigned to history. Using a sketch by Buckler found in the Arundel Castle archives, the present Duke, Edward, 18th Duke of Norfolk, had light fittings made for his study. Each winter, when the castle is closed, a small team of people work hard to deep clean all the rooms and the contents of the castle. Where necessary, artefacts are sent for specialist conservation, and all is made ready for the arrival of visitors in the spring. For over 200 years, visitors have been welcomed to Arundel Castle, although opening times and access have varied over the years. In 1805, the keep, gatehouse and grounds were opened 2 days a week, with the public buying their tickets at the Norfolk Arms Hotel. In 2023, They book their tickets online and are free to enjoy much more of the castle and the grounds, including the Collector Earl's Garden, which opened in 2008. The work to rebuild the castle in the late 19th century involved hundreds of people and showcased design, craftsmanship and the use of new technologies, whilst being true to traditional styles and ideals, leaving a legacy that hundreds of thousands of visitors enjoy today. I hope this magazine has highlighted for you some of the stories behind this ambitious project. Duke Henry's vision, in conjunction with Butler's design, lives on at Arundel Castle for today and the next 1,000 years.
I'd like to thank Arundel Museum for allowing us to use this information for you. The exhibition will continue until the spring of 2024, and if you'd like to know more or would like to visit, please check on the museum's website, arundelmuseum.org, or call on 01903 885 866 for specific opening times. My thanks go to John for joining me and to our technician, Peter Langellan. Until next time, goodbye everyone.